This podcast is sponsored by Sophie Reaptress. She makes cave suits. She is a one-woman business based out of Philadelphia, and she knows what she's doing. She's been making leggings for a long time, other things too, and she's a caver, and so she thought she'd make cave suits because she saw what was out there, didn't see a lot out there to choose from, so she decided to make her own. They are made from 500 denier cordura all over and twice as thick where it counts, elbows, knees, butts, anywhere you need the extra reinforcement. And unlike a lot of other cave suits, they come in a variety of colors. She's got a basic design, or she can make any customization you want. Extra pockets, inside pockets, knee pad pockets. She does these bat stencils, and she'll put them anywhere. Everything is made to order just for you, so if you got an idea, send it to Sophie. You can find her on Instagram at Sophie Reaptress, and her website is sophiereaptress.com. I have a link in the description to this podcast. Sophie Reaptress, get a cave suit, a good one, from Sophie. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. My name is Matt Pelser. I am from the Central Indiana Grotto. I've been hearing from a lot of new cavers who have found the podcast. Thank you for listening. And make sure that if you are caving, you are doing it right. You are going with people who know what they're doing. And I would really like it if you would at least talk to a grotto, if not join the grotto. I mean, I would prefer that you join the grotto, but, you know, caving's not for everybody. And maybe after a while you find that it's not really for you, but I'm glad you're at least trying it. And a grotto, by the way, is a local caving club. It's a local chapter of the National Speleological Society, at least here in the United States. And through grotto membership, you can meet other people, go on more cave trips, and learn how to do it the right way. Because, as I say, caving, like a lot of things, can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. Quite the opposite if you do. So just got to get that out there. And I just talked about our sponsor, Sophie Reaptress. She makes cave suits. I have been meaning to mention this for the last few months, and I've just forgotten to mention it until now. I lost my cave suit. It wasn't my Sophie Reaptress cave suit. No, I had a Meander, an all-black Meander, that I'm pretty sure I took to Sarah, and it never made it back with me. So if you have seen a tall, all-black Meander, maybe somebody found it at Sarah and took it home with them after nobody claimed it or something, I don't know. If you've heard about a new cave suit that was found back in early May, it's probably mine. I would love to have it back, because even though I like my Sophie suit, I like this one too, and if you've ever bought a cave suit, you know they're not cheap. So I'd really like to not lose that one. Maybe I already have. I don't know. I would really, really like it back. So if you have seen my black Meander cave suit for a tall guy, please let me know. You can email me at alpineproductions@gmail.com, alpineproductions@gmail.com, or find me on Facebook. I've already made a lot of other cave friends on Facebook. You'll find me, Matt Pelser. Oh, wow. In the caving world, what a big story, this Mark Dickey story. I am so glad that he got out. And of course, bravo to everyone involved. You can go back and check out the episode that I did with Mark, where he talks about his caving academy. And Mark, if you're listening, I'd love to follow up on that ordeal once you feel like it, if you ever do. Totally understand if you don't. But I'm sure that a recap in the interest of cave rescue knowledge is something that you're already thinking about. So anyway, just putting that out there, Mark, I'm just glad you're out. Okay, this month's guest, Trey Hinkey. He's been a contestant on Naked and Afraid. We talk a lot about Naked and Afraid. He's also a caver. I knew him as a caver first. I just know him as an all-around crazy adventure guy. And as you'll hear, one of the nicest people, very open, very forthcoming. And it'll be pretty obvious. This was a loose talk. This was at registration at Indiana Cave Capers on that Saturday in early August, and I was working registration, and by that time, you know, most people who were coming to Capers were already coming, so it was not very busy. Trey comes over. I had my recorder. I said, let's go. I'm eating trail mix. It was a very informal sort of thing, and as I was going through for the edit, I was just like, all right, maybe a little too loose, but here I am in a less filtered environment. And we talked about a lot. We talked about the flood in 2016, which has been talked about on this podcast before. And actually, Trey talked about it in a short little piece that we did in a Cave Capers episode from 2021. He kind of expands on that. He tells the story of the summer sausage, which I think he also shared during that little piece. And we talk about the sudden death of his girlfriend, Beth, last year, which was very sad. Talked about OTR. And at this point, it was early August, and he was looking forward to OTR. He went. But once we get there, you know, understand that it had not yet happened. And he was really just calling out people from Indiana, because there's not a lot of Indiana people that go to OTR, at least not enough by his opinion. And there's a cool story at the very end about a dog rescue in a cave. I loved talking to Trey. I hope you like listening to it as much as I enjoyed doing it. Here's me and Trey Hinkey. He's back.
Back again.
He's back
again.
More.
So I'm guessing you can talk a little more now about Naked and Afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't give up any production secrets, but yeah, other than that, hit me with your best shot.
Well, your episode has aired, right?
It has aired.
It has aired. Has it rerun?
Well, there was the...
The Naked and Afraid
I'm not
marathons?
Sure. I'm not sure if I've been on a marathon yet, but no. There was the original airing April 23rd, I believe. And then a week later, they did the uncensored version. Mm. Still everything. Sorry you don't get to see what's behind the blur. There's still the blur.
Right.
But they show just, like, deleted scenes.
Right.
So, but that's, as far as I know, the only time there's been any reruns aired.
Yeah.
I don't watch the marathons too often anymore, so...
So that was probably a cool thing to be a part of, though.
It was a pretty amazing experience. It really was.
Like, of all of those shows that are out there, that's probably the one you, would you say we're destined to be a part of?
I think so. I was actually, before I ever applied for Naked and Afraid, I was scouted by Alone, and they'd asked me to apply, and I turned it down.
Yeah?
Yeah, simply because, you know, with Naked and Afraid, you go anywhere. It's kind of random. You can go anywhere on the planet. With Alone, you always go to a cold environment.
Oh.
I will roll the dice and take my chances with Naked and Afraid.
Okay.
I don't want to go into something knowing that it's going to be a cold environment, regardless.
I didn't realize that was a...
I'll do a frozen challenge. You know, if that's luck of the draw, that's where they decide to put me, that's fine. But Alone is too much cold for too long, and I don't care for cold environments anyway.
Could you do it eventually? Like, could you, like, if is the offer still on the table?
I have no idea. I know under contract with Discovery for like 2 years.
Oh, really? So, okay. So you can't really do anything anyway.
Yeah, I can't do anything else anyway. But you know, I see a lot of people. There's been quite a few Naked and Afraid casts that have gone on to do other shows. Mm-hmm. There's a recent one coming up. I think it's like Fight for Survival. And it's got like three of the former cast. Mm-hmm. So there are people going on and doing other stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could, but I'm not into competition, for one.
Yeah.
And that's essentially a competition. I also don't want to sign up for something I know is going to be a cold environment,
right,
no matter what the challenge.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, okay. So last time was just a quickie. Hoping we get to talk for a little longer this time. So should we start at the beginning when it comes to caving?
Sure.
So do you want to talk expedition caving? You just want to talk about what got you into it?
So I got into caving originally in Boy Scouts, about 13 years old.
Yeah.
And we did our first trip into those Illinois caverns.
Okay.
And one of the scouts had slipped down into a pit. Twisted his ankle. It wasn't real deep, but it was too much for us to free climb.
Oh.
So all the scouts got together. We lashed our belts together, and me and his brother got lowered down, lashed him up, and pulled
him way.
Out. Did our first cave rescue at about 13. So I was hooked immediately.
Yeah.
And did a couple more trips there, and started doing other trips. Like we went on a trip down in the Ozarks and was looking for a cave called Cyclops.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be a pit? And we found a pit, but apparently it wasn't Cyclops. I don't know what it was, but it was pretty awesome.
All right.
You know, the scout masters, they were great, but they also knew nothing at all about our need for helmets and, you know, harnesses.
Yeah.
So we made harnesses out of ropes, carabiners. We got down, got back up safely, but it was pretty much hand-over-hand climbing. And,
all right.
You know, really didn't learn the right ways. In fact, I was caving for about 20 years, spelunking. No helmet.
Yeah.
Mag light at best.
Yeah.
No backup lights. I'm taking in no gear other than maybe a bottle of water and some snacks. That's about it.
Yeah.
And
how far were you going on that?
Just as far as my friends would allow.
Okay.
Typically, I'd get somebody to go with me, and they probably would never go back.
So nothing like what you do now.
No, but not at all. But I thought it was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, well, it probably was, given the lack of equipment.
Right. And I didn't know that there was other cavers out there.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that there was people mapping caves. And I always thought, man, somebody should be mapping these. Yeah. You know, just in case somebody comes in, does something stupid, you know, like us. And, you know, yeah. If we need a rescue, there should be maps to tell people how to get to us.
Yeah.
So I was always real fascinated in that. And
well, had you known of maps of the caves that you were visiting?
No,
hadn't. So
no.
You were kind of, you didn't even potentially know the names of the caves, and you were just...
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Illinois Caverns, we knew.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that was a known local cave. Actually, has pretty long history.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the caves that I was entering were, I'm later finding out, were like Brainerd's Cave in Illinois on the Mississippi River.
Oh, okay. I wondered if you'd found out which ones.
We always called it Bat Cave because, I mean, there was more bat population in there than I've ever seen in any cave.
Yeah.
And this was back in late 80s, early 90s. It just really piqued my interest in survey. So yeah. I later find out that this cave had only ever been, at least in the 60s, when the Illinois Geological Survey or Speleological Survey was published. At that point, all it said was that there was a crawling entrance about 50 feet. You get to a ledge, and then that's, you can see that there's big cave beyond that, but that's all that was mentioned in the survey.
Oh.
So I had already been in. Now, there's an old barge rope that was rigged, so we hand-over-hand climbed that barge rope to get down about 50 feet or so,
yeah.
And then scale the ledge and drop down about another 50 feet on another old barge rope.
Oh, my God.
Pretty intense for what we were, for our experience levels.
Yeah.
And doing it with no helmets and headlamps. And
oh, boy.
Good times.
Well, okay,
good
so times. That goes on for about 20 years.
Right.
But then you went legit, so to speak.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So my sister was on a Facebook game, and she had met this caver, Mud Puppy. I'm sure most of us know Mud Puppy.
I've heard Mud Puppy,
She noticed his profile picture. He was in a cave, and she hit him up on Messenger and was like, hey, my brother's into caving. Can I give him your information?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up giving Pup a call, and he turned me on to Central Indiana Grotto. That was back in 2010.
Yeah?
And
same year I joined. Well, actually, I joined in 11, but...
It was end of 2010, like probably September was maybe my first grotto meeting. It was probably right after Capers.
Yeah.
And I think Glenn Hicks was the first one that I'd met, but got into the organized caving and just blew my mind.
Well, yeah. And so, all right, Binkley is where you've focused a lot of your energy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Indiana's longest cave.
Yeah.
You were there on a lot of those trips under Dave Everton.
Yeah.
Right?
Did quite a few trips under Dave. And then we got in, when I moved back here from Pennsylvania, got involved with Dewey Eckert and pretty much was involved with almost the entire discovery of Dewey.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was a really fun project and probably my favorite part of the whole Binkley system.
Yeah? So can you describe it then for people who might not really know? So I mean, it's an entrance on private property. We didn't know it was part of the Binkley system. That was
right.
Later found out,
and I believe that back in the 80s was it when they were originally dropping into this pit and mm-hmm. surveyed to the left, and I don't even know which direction, but went to the left from the entrance and really didn't get much, maybe a couple hundred feet.
Yeah.
The main drain wasn't discovered until, I want to say, 2015, early 2016. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was a 300-foot belly crawl in a stream. And that filtered out a lot of people.
Yeah.
So there wasn't many people that had gotten beyond that point yet. Once they did, they're opening it up as we go. So yeah. You know, it starts out as a real beater. Everything that we discovered, we really had to work for it. But we also opened everything up now to where, you know, they're taking trips in there today. And,
yeah. You
know, they're going to have a blast. But, so you do a 300-foot belly crawl, and you come out over a waterfall into what they now call, I think it's Possum Pass or Dead Possum Pass.
Yeah.
There was a possum in the cave, and it was not in good shape. It was alive, but...
It was alive?
Yeah, it was in bad shape, though. Very emaciated.
And,
I think it had been lost in there for a very, very long time.
Oh, my word.
So they ended up having to put it down, I believe. And I wasn't on that trip. But you know, my first trip in, we ended up discovering the canyon that led to what we now call the V crevice.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just keep it clean. But we call it the V crevice.
You can figure it out.
Oh. So we ended up on that trip. We surveyed to the V crevice and shot a station down at the bottom, or just, you know, just tape. We didn't drop it. Mm-hmm. Then the next trip we went in, we rigged it and ended up bringing in a scaling pole eventually. Mm. And I mean, that's scaling pole.
Classic Binkley.
Yeah. And this is the thinnest scaling pole in the cave.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's pretty wobbly, but it's strong. It'll hold you.
It'll hold you. You had to take it through that crawlway.
Yeah. And I think that was the biggest reason why it was made so small, because there was, you know, this is pretty far back in the cave at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You're already looking at a minimum, I think, of 3 hours to get to that point when we were first discovering it all. Now I think you can get back to the abyss in about 3 hours.
Mm.
So we've done a lot of work on it.
I guess so.
Really opened it up. Nobody's been back there in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So probably since the last time Capers was here.
Mm-hmm.
But that is by far my favorite part of the cave. So after the V crevice, you're going to do a little bit of belly crawls. It gets kind of tight, opens up into a room, and then another belly crawl. And then you're on hands and knees, and eventually you come into June's Junction, which has the most beautiful ceilings I've ever seen in a cave.
Yeah.
Very interesting ceilings. There's just spirals in the limestone.
Oh, cool.
Real flat ceilings, not many formations at all, but the spiral designs are very... symmetrical. I mean, it's really neat seeing it all.
Or is, do we know?
I don't think that we have gotten a definitive answer on that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, pretty cool. from there, at that junction, we focused on the main route, main trail. We stuck with the stream and was following the air. And eventually you come to the abyss. And the abyss is, I believe it's like 35 feet. Might have even been 50 foot, just straight drop off into a large room.
Yeah.
And there was a little ledge on the side that was just mud, covering some breakdown. Looked very unstable, but looks like that's the way we're going. We lugged some rope back there and anchored it on both sides, and it's just a hand line. But in the beginning, we were rigging up and, you know, in harnesses and everything to get across it. There's really no need for that. The mud's so sticky, you're not going anywhere.
Oh, all right, well, that's reassuring.
Stay between the line and the wall, and you're good.
Okay.
And from there, you go on to Mary's room, and that's about as far as I've been. I, unfortunately, was not on the next trip that made the connection into Binkley proper.
Oh.
And I've not yet done the through trip.
So the through trip would be then from Dewey Eckert to the historic entrance?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. All right, there's a map right behind me. I guess I could look at it.
That was pretty nice of Gary to donate the map.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool.
But that map is dated 2018. I would imagine the current map is a little bigger, but maybe not in that formal...
A little bit. So in 2018 was when that map was printed.
Yeah.
And there's definitely been some updates. I think we have, what's on that one, like 44.1. We are well over 45, 46.
Oh, that's right.
I'm not sure what the latest length is.
But, yeah.
Unfortunately, I have not been caving in Binkley since February, so it's been a while.
Where have you been?
Just with everything with the show and just been traveling all over the place. I went to North Carolina and Tennessee and just kind of all over the place. Just been busy. Life's happening.
Has it been caving, though? Has any of it been caving?
No, it's all been Naked and Afraid.
Oh, no.
I just like to get naked.
Okay. It's all been that. All right.
been hanging out with a lot of naked friends.
So are you doing pressers for the show? You doing interviews and things like that?
I did a podcast. Malou Beyonce. She does a podcast. Oh, Heck No. And that's a pretty good one. Really enjoy her podcast. Shout out to Malou.
Nice.
And then I wasn't on the podcast, but they Jaked and Afraid covers each episode.
Okay.
And they have a guest speaker come on. And fortunately, the guest speaker was a very good friend of mine, Andrew Shade.
Okay.
And
so good things were said.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Andrew called me up the morning before he did the. Uh-oh.
Is that a tornado siren?
That sounds like a tornado siren.
It's noon on Saturday.
Seems like an odd time for a test.
Well, it's probably the 12 noon, even though it's 12:01. Way to go, city government.
I think that was our applause light.
Is that it? Yeah. All right. We're sitting here doing it in an open-air barn, and that's just going to happen, you know?
It's just going to happen.
But you were in Binkley in February.
Yeah, we a couple weeks before, we had just gone in the Deep Darkness entrance at Indiana Caverns.
Mm.
And we were going into a location where I actually did my first ever Binkley-related trip. It was in Blowing Hole, and the way we came in...
At that time, it wasn't connected yet?
It wasn't connected yet.
Yeah.
And I had to do 3 hours wading through chest-deep water, chin-deep water at times, to get back to this location, where now all we got to do is climb down a 200-foot ladder. Bam, we're there. So, in Benton Boulevard. And my first trip...
Did you say a 200-foot ladder?
Or a 100-foot ladder, but then another 100-foot
That's still a big ladder.
Mountain. You got a 100-foot mountain of breakdown to climb down as well.
Oh, my God.
Now, you do climb the ladder on rope.
Okay.
You're in a harness. They're pretty safe about how they get people in and out. Although, when we do these caving trips, we're not using their climbing system. We don't use anything offered by Indiana Caverns at all. We use all our own gear.
Oh.
That releases them of any kind of liability if something were to happen.
You're talking about the Deep Darkness entrance.
Just
okay.
The entrance. All we're doing is we're rigging to their anchor point and rappelling in and then climbing back out.
Okay.
Most of us don't even use the ladder.
Yeah.
Just use your climbing gear and they provide an entrance and a rigging point.
Okay. Gotcha.
So we got into Benton Boulevard this time and went back to where a few months earlier, it's me and Nicholas Anderson and Brad Barkham. We had gone in to kind of do a recon trip.
Mm-hmm.
On my first trip, we were looking for a connection into what we now know as Big Bone Mountain. The first trip, it was unsuccessful. It was also a photo trip. That was really cool. It was my first trip with Dave Everton and got in on a...
Plus the kitchen sink?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh,
nice.
Yeah. That was a brutal trip. My first time ever in a wetsuit, and I was in way over my head. It either broke me or it made me, so I swore I'd never be back.
look how well that turned out.
So, intentions. We went back to the same location again to look for that connection or that continuation, and this time the guys found it.
Yeah.
Ended up, I don't remember what the overall footage was. I know it was over 1,000 feet. Virgin Cave, nice big borehole that ended in breakdown.
Yeah.
There's a stream. It's been Ditrace connected, I believe. So we do have that connection to Big Bone Mountain now.
Right on. There it is. And what does that save you?
Well, we haven't got a physical connection yet, so it doesn't really save us anything.
Nothing
right
yet.
Now,
but we know it's there.
you know, I don't know if they will ever do trips up in that way, but it will be nice to be able to say that on a tour that you could go down through here and get into the deep darkness.
Yeah.
Or go on deep darkness trips and say, you know, if you continue on here, you could come out in the tour route.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess it will be really cool to make the connection, although I don't know that it's going to save us any kind of time or anything from point A to point B.
Right. But okay.
Might benefit the caverns, I think.
All right. So. Would you say most of your survey-type project caving is Binkley?
Most of it, yeah.
Okay.
I did a little bit out in Pennsylvania.
Where was
not
that?
Much. It was in southwestern PA on the Chestnut Ridge there by Laurel Caverns.
Okay.
You know, I found a lot of caves while I was out there. But
you lived out there for a little while.
I was out there for 2 years.
When was that?
2014 through 20 or into 2016.
Okay.
Then moved back here. But while I was there, I had a hard time getting involved with Pittsburgh Grotto or any of the local cavers. I didn't have a license, so I can't exactly get to them. But I've got great caves all around me, so I'm always trying to get them to come to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, a bunch of strangers. They don't know who this guy is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I eventually found some bites and formed some really friendly relationships, really good relationships with some of the guys out there. Ended up finding a cave that I seen mentioned in old newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
The MAKC had been out looking for this many years ago, and they couldn't find it. And I didn't find the particular cave that they were looking for necessarily. Not that entrance, but I found a new entrance that had washed open.
Ooh.
So I got to, got to get the guys down there.
Did you know that at
this.
The time, or do you only know that in retrospect? Like you just
I knew what I was looking for.
Okay.
And the general area. And when I found this, I immediately got a hold of Karen Bang.
Yeah.
I think it was. And, or no, Kim Metzger. I think it was Kim Metzger with the MAKC. She had confirmed that this was the cave that they were looking for, or should be anyway.
Yeah.
And just a new entrance. The old entrance was closed off, and this just is one that opened up in the stream bed.
Got washed in?
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
A dried up stream bed at that, so only during a heavy rain or snow melt would it take on water.
Okay.
But it was like peanut butter mud at the bottom.
Ew.
Brutal dig.
Well, that's to be expected, I guess, given the circumstances.
Yeah. So I got to name that one, but I donated the naming rights to the MAKC.
Yeah.
So I guess when a new member joins, they get to pick a cave name.
Yeah, okay.
So I donated those naming rights. They ended up temporarily calling it Pit Cave.
Pit Cave?
And, yeah, it's got a lot of potential. It's a low on the mountain, so there's a lot of room for it to go up into the mountain.
All right.
It's a pretty fun project. I just wish I was there a little longer to keep working on it.
Yeah, is it still that name?
I'm not sure if they've still got the same name or not, because it was apparently owned by power company or windmill companies or something, or quarry or something.
Okay.
And we really shouldn't have been there in the first
place. Oh, no.
We did not have permission.
Oh,
and,
well.
We did not. They've asked the after I was gone, I guess the guys got caught out there. I mean, it's not posted or anything. You know, it's a lot of wide open mountain.
So that was a we didn't know situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's so much land out there in the mountains. A lot of it is, you know, state land. A lot of it's nature preserves. And, you know, just pretty much got free run of the mountainside.
Yeah. What did that one end up being as far as length when you were done with it?
I don't think we got a whole lot out of that one because the dig was so intense. And we might have got 100 feet, which is not bad for Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
so.
That ain't bad. But it was called Pit Cave, so I'm assuming there is a bit of a pit.
Yeah,
happening.
It was a rappel in.
It's a rappel in by how
I think
long?
It was a 30-foot rappel.
Oh, okay. That's a rappel.
Oh, yeah, pretty much a straight drop. Yeah, there really wasn't no free climbing to it. It was a fun little cave, though. Fun project. I really enjoyed working out there with the Pennsylvania guys once I got to get in with a few of them.
All right, so then you make it back to Indiana.
Then I get back to Indiana, and all the fun begins.
All of it begins.
Finally back with Binkley, and, you know, that's a project that my heart's always been with since day one.
Mm-hmm. Were you there for the blowing hole connection?
I was there. Yep.
Yeah? Yep. For the handshake?
So on my my first trip with Dave, and it was Dave, Brad Barkham, and Tim Pride.
Mm.
And was Nick Vinton there? He might have been. I don't think he was. I think it was just the four of us that trip. But Brad was telling me about these skeletal remains that they had found just like a month before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm into bones. I was pretty excited. I've been wanting to see it, but it didn't happen until about 2 years later.
Okay.
And they were under the impression that these bones were all modern cows and pigs.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd sent a tooth and a photograph to the State Museum, and Ron Richards, that's what he suggested they were. And mm-hmm. very little evidence to go on. So I finally get into the cave, into that part of the cave, when we were looking for the connection. And while I'm in there, I am seeing all these skeletal remains and thinking, these are not modern.
No.
There is no way. They're already fossilizing. So, you know, some of these are very much into the fossilization process. They have to be a minimum of 10,000 years old.
Yeah.
Well, that sparked interest, and we did make the connection that day, so it was a really exciting trip all the way around.
Oh, my God. So all that happened in the same day.
Yep. I'm just have no idea what they are. I just know they're really old.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all kinds of thoughts going through my mind, but some of them pretty ridiculous. Oh, we got dinosaur remains. Because the peccaries, I've never seen anything like that.
No.
Yeah, pretty exciting. But yeah, that connection was pretty awesome.
Well, okay, so did we ever find out what kind of bones they were?
Yes, we did. They were the one that he had identified as the modern cow turned out to be a bison. I believe it was something like 38 to 43,000 years.
Okay. So still a bovid.
Yep. Yep. And
wow.
Modern pigs were flat-headed peccaries.
Wow.
They've been extinct for the last 10,000 years.
Dang. And
any of the remains that have been carbon dated have been dated between 38 and 42, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely a little older than anything modern.
I'd say so.
And wow. It turned out to be one of the largest Ice Age bone discoveries in U.S. history.
Really? Yeah. In Blowing Hole Cave?
In Binkley.
Well, in Binkley.
Yep.
Okay. Now, are those the ones that are on display for the tour?
Yep, they're you see some on the tour, and also if you go to the Indiana State Museum, they got a really good display of them there.
Yeah, from that day,
from the cave. Not from that day, but they've come back and they
from
did
the cave. Right.
They did like two different digs. I can't remember when the first one was. I think it was like 2013, 2014, and then another in 2018.
Mm. So let's go to Connection Day. So that happened on the Connection Day.
Yeah.
And what was all that like? I mean, I know there were a few.
So we were doing a radio locate that day as well.
You were doing radio. You were doing smoke for a long time on several trips to just get an idea of where things might be happening, right?
Right.
You had looked on the overlay, and you were like, it's probably going to happen around here.
We had set up a radio locate, and I'm up on top of Big Bone Mountain, and I'm talking to Gary on the surface. I think it was Gary and Fig that were on the surface. Everybody else is off checking out this lead that is now the connection.
Uh-huh.
And I'm transferring what they're saying to me in their lead. I'm telling that to the people on the surface. I come to find out they were only 17 feet over my head. So I had really good radio transmission with them, but we could only shout back and forth with the guys that were in the lead. The radios wouldn't go through the walls, but they'd go through the ceilings.
Okay.
So it's Tim McLean, hollering out with him, and I hear, we have voice.
Nah.
We have, and I'm relaying all this to the surface, and we have voice. We have light. We have smoke. We have we have handshake. I got to go. So I run down the mountain, run in there, or crawl in there, and we touched fingertips. Brad Barkham was on the other side.
All right,
we all took
right.
turns just touching fingertips through that opening or through that connection.
But then it was dug open.
It was very sketchy breakdown.
Okay.
It's not something that you want to go doing a lot of trips through. But, yeah, okay. It was opened up enough that we could we could do a few trips through there fairly safely.
Yeah? Did anyone come through there, or did they go back out the way they came?
You know, I don't remember.
No.
I think they may have gone out the way they came because that's where their vehicles were.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I believe they went back out through Blowing Hole.
That's exciting.
And the rest of us, we headed out. Back out through Joy's Gulp, Geistover Pit. Now there's the service entrance there at Indiana Caverns that could allow us access into where the digs are.
Yeah.
Or to the top of Big Bone Mountain. It's actually at the former Ice Age entrance.
Okay.
So that's right where I did that radio locate.
Yeah.
So before development ever began, that's how we got in to do the initial skeletal assessment when I brought Ron Richards from the State Museum down to assess these bones.
That's so cool. Old bones.
Yes. Love bones.
I imagine that's top five Binkley moments for you.
I would say the bones and that connection, that whole trip was, yeah, definitely the top five.
What are some other top five moments?
Well, there was the flood.
Yeah.
That's got to be number one.
Yeah.
I got stuck in the cave for 39 hours, and I mean, we've heard Laura's.
And we heard a little bit. We've heard a little bit from you, but I mean, if you're willing to give your account, I think people want to hear it. I think it's worth hearing.
Been a few years now, but
so end of 16, right?
Yeah, it was December 16.
Between Christmas and New Year's, right?
I want to say it was December 17th, and we came out on the 19th.
Okay.
So we go in, we're going back to the DMB crawl and going to go beyond to...
Where is that?
That is going the historic entrance and about 7 hours back. The nearest room at that point was the living room or the dining room.
Hmm.
It's back there quite a ways.
Yeah.
So 7 hours in, going to go do some surveying and... we got to the DMB crawl and the ear dipper, and that ear dipper was no longer an ear dipper. I noticed the foam coming in, and I'd asked Laura, you know, how long has this been here?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's good observation. I don't know. And I said, this isn't right. This isn't normal.
Yeah.
And she described the water crawl to me as being, you know, you just got one ear underwater.
Yeah.
With head turned sideways, you can get through, you know, whole face is out of water. Well, I went through and I've got half my face under the water.
Yeah.
So this isn't right. So I immediately called out to everybody up ahead and said, you know, we got to go.
Wow.
And everybody hightailed it back. And before the end of it, I think Rand and Marion were the last two to come through. And I think Marion had to pretty well swim her entire way through that ear dipper.
Wow.
So, wow. Water was coming up pretty quick, and the walls, what was dry passage, was you could see water coming in all the cracks and crevices, and I ended up taking a wrong turn and got into a rib crusher. It was like, yeah, you know, I've got people backed up behind me that are following me, and I just led them to their death. So fortunately, Laura's up ahead, and she's like, no, back up, and you know, she directed me to the right route, and got back out, and we all took a break up in the living room and had our lunch and thought, well, we'll wait it out. About 45 minutes, water will go back down. No big deal.
Sure. It always does.
Right. Well, I'm used to it on the tour route. That's about what it takes if there's a big rainstorm, toad strangler. You've got about 45 minutes till the water's back down again.
Just wait that out.
And yeah, thought, no problem. We got this. And 45 minutes came and went, and water wasn't coming up anymore, but it wasn't going down either.
Oh, my gosh.
So we just got to go, you know, try to see what's ahead, start making our way towards the entrance, and got to a point where the rapids were just too intense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's chest deep on some of us, chin deep on others,
Wow. And
just really intense rapids. And decided it's probably best that we call it a day. Let's find a dry place to camp. And we did. Found a nice high ground up in Fantastic Avenue, or off of Fantastic Avenue. And just kind of waited it out. Yeah. We knew if we can't, if nobody can get to us, then we obviously can't get out. And we knew Gary was on top of it. We right. knew right away somebody's going to have yeah. some people called in.
Okay.
So, and that's exactly the way it went down. As soon as the storm hit, Gary called it in. Laura, you know, with all of her NCRC training, she knew exactly what was going on the surface.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
the call out was made at this time, then, you know, this is what's going on. And she nailed it all the way through.
Yeah.
So,
see, by this point, they're doing this. By this point, somebody's waiting at the entrance.
So we ended up having, we went out and left some notes to let the crew know as they were coming and looking for us, you know, this is where we are because we're not at our destination.
Right.
You know, we were finishing up the last of our snacks and running out of all of our provisions and getting ready to pack it up and attempt our way out.
Make
we're
a
just
push.
Thinking about it and talking about it. And about that time, we hear a whoop whoop.
Oh.
And that had there was
music to your ears.
Oh, yeah. It was Tim and Shane and Nick. Yeah, I think I looked around the corner and seen those guys, you know, some of my closest caving buddies, and there they are coming to our rescue, and I'm pretty sure I started bawling like a little baby. Oh.
At this point,
it
it's
was
how
so
long?
Good to see them.
At this point, it had been how long?
At this point, for me, I think it was... That was probably about 30-some hours in.
Okay.
I know I was among the first to come out, me and Seth Gower. We were still feeling fit enough that we could get out on our own,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the help of Tim. Tim, he came in, he got an assessment of what was going on, and then he was rushing back out.
Yeah.
Give the rescue update.
Okay.
So he took Seth, and I felt pretty good myself, and let's do this. About halfway through, I'm thinking I should not be doing this. I mean, I was whooped.
I bet. But, you essentially hadn't slept.
Yeah, no, we did not sleep at all. Yeah. There was times where we would rest our eyes, but Laura was really good about making sure that nobody fell asleep.
Yeah, was it, I didn't.
We were just worried about hypothermia.
Oh, yeah.
Fall asleep and you don't wake up.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That was our number one concern, was just hypothermia.
Yeah.
We knew we were dry, we were safe. Just how long can we hold out in this in this cold, wet cave?
Yeah.
So I got out, I think it was 36 hours. And then the last of them emerged at 39 hours.
Wow. Shoot. So you were one of the first ones out.
Yep.
Had you gone in the historic entrance that day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, we did. So and that's where we went in historic out. Entrance. We found the lowest water levels that we'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Historically, Rand was on this trip. He's been caving in this cave for a very long time, and he said that these are the lowest water levels he'd ever seen.
And you came,
and
out,
came out in the highest.
Very, very different circumstances.
Yes, very different.
Wow, that's crazy. And it was just a combination of, it was frozen at the surface.
Right.
Water came down quick.
Well, and it was a nice, like 70-degree day or something like that when we went in. And temperatures dropped drastically down to 17, I think it was,
wow.
and with the rain storm, and everything just flooded straight in. Nothing
wow.
could soak in at all. So.
Goodness.
And there was areas that got, you know, an inch and a half, and other areas of the drainage system that got 6 inches.
Wow.
They were calling for less than a half inch of rain that day. So we've seen a lot more rain than that. No big deal.
Yeah.
This took us all by surprise, to say the least.
Yeah. Okay. Among my favorite parts of any cave trip is coming out. Whether it was a successful trip or if there was anything at all that was harrowing, you know. I've never experienced what you experienced, but do you remember what it was like coming out? I know you came out at night, so you didn't have the satisfaction of sunlight hitting your face.
Oh, but I did.
You did?
I did. The tower lights that they had set up out there.
Oh, yeah, because they
might as well have been daylight.
Really?
And I remember thinking as I'm coming to the climb up to the entrance, you get a big burst of chicken.
Because it's a chicken farm.
Yeah, on chicken farm. And, yeah, that was the best smelling chicken I ever smelt in my life.
And they had a fire going.
They had a fire going, and yeah, they had pizza for us.
Oh God, I bet that was the best pizza you ever had.
It was great. It was great.
Do you remember what kind?
I don't. I remember scarfing it down. And,
it didn't matter what kind.
Really, I didn't stick around long. My girlfriend at the time was there, and we knew that it was going to be several hours before the next group emerged, so we were going to go back to her place. And then, you know, just get a shower and come back.
Yeah.
And came back 3 hours later, everybody's out, and everybody's gone. There's still a few stragglers. No, I got to see Laura and Sarah that evening, and maybe Jesse. But everybody was back in their vehicles and headed out by the time I come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a day.
It was a fun trip. That's definitely number one on my... on my Binkley memories.
Fun in retrospect, maybe not at the time.
An
experience.
Definitely an experience. So I would like to do it again under controlled circumstances, not in the flood, but I would like to go back to
the same area
and just camp out.
Just to be there again.
Just to be there again.
There's this spiritual connection to that place.
Absolutely.
I would imagine.
Yeah. I can't make a trip in there and go past Layman's Cutoff without stopping
just
and
looking,
thinking about that trip.
Yeah.
So.
You know, for some people, a trip like that might, you know, freak them out or make them a little more cautious or maybe a little more apprehensive to do anything. Do you think that the opposite is the case for you? Like it's strengthened your
yes and no
confidence in your abilities?
Yes and no. I noticed it was about a year later, I was leading a blowing hole trip at Capers.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in the water up to my chest. Nice, calm water. You know, no rapids or anything, but it was at the same depth that that cave water was when we decided that we were in a little too deep. We've got to go camp. And something triggered in my mind, and it just freaked me out there in Blowing Hole. I was never worried about it on our trip.
No.
You know, I felt pretty sure-footed, and you know, that I was never that concerned with our... I knew we were good. We're all experienced cavers. We're good.
Sure.
But somehow or another, since then, if I get in water up to my nipples, I just... something triggers in my mind. And I've been able to kind of push through it a little bit more and more here anymore. But something's kind of clicked in my head that I don't like that so much.
Oh.
So,
interesting.
But... with anything else, you just got to push through it.
Yeah, but it sticks with you.
Yes,
it's interesting what sticks with you.
Right.
I'm sure it's different for everybody.
Yep.
If I talk to Laura or Marion or anybody else who was there that day, it might be something else, mm-hmm. if anything, you know.
I'm sure everybody's got a little trigger, but yeah, it's probably something a little different for everybody. And it may be something, like in this case, it wasn't a big deal for me in that moment, but it's, I guess all the memories come back, come flooding back.
It's not my story to tell, but I do enjoy telling people about the summer sausage.
Yes.
So, since it isn't my story to tell, can you kind of walk us through that? So you're waiting it out. You're doing your penguin piles and everybody to keep everybody warm and awake, and you're running out of snacks, and then you remember that you have this summer sausage.
Well, back when we first realized the cave was flooding.
Yeah.
We had our dinner there in the living room, and I think it was Laura had brought in, or not Laura, it was Marion, had brought in like lasagna or something. I mean, we had like a nice dinner.
Yeah.
And
like a freeze-dried thing?
I'm not sure exactly. Something she cooked up there. There in the cave.
Nice.
That's some good stuff. And, you know, I had a nice meal, and I had offered it then. You know, I've got the summer sausage.
So you knew it.
Well, we'll just save it for later.
Yeah.
We forgot all about it. We're sitting back there going through our provisions, and everybody's emptying out their packs, and I pull out the summer sausage, and everybody's jaws just drop.
Was it a big one?
It was. It was a half pound or 1 pound. No, perfect size for a Swago.
Sure.
Bridgeford Farms.
Bridgeford Farms.
Yep.
All right, so you...
Or Bridgeford Meat Company, whatever it was. Bridgeford Summer Sausage.
And we know that because you told them about it, right?
Yeah, so after the trip, and, you know, this basically, even though we could have gone without the food, it definitely boosted morale greatly.
Yeah, well, it's all about that, isn't it?
It is. It's all mind game. So after the trip, I had emailed the Bridgeford company, and I thanked them for this wonderful product. And they're like, they sent me back a link with an article. And they're like, was this you? I said, yeah, that was me.
Wait, they had mentioned it in the...
It was in some news article, and they were just talking about this in the...
So they,
I guess I had mentioned it, and he Googled it, probably.
So
they sent me a care package, and I want to say it was something like 17 pounds of meat, beef jerky of various good variety, and a bunch of summer sausage. And I ended up passing that around to everybody that was on the trip.
Oh, man.
Then about 6 months later, got another care package just out of the blue.
No kidding.
So, yeah, Bridgeford became our sponsor, so to speak. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. That's very cool of them to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
It really was.
I mean, how lucky for them to have been the one selected before you went and had
right.
your ordeal. But maybe at the same time, lucky for you, you chose the kind of company that would do that
right.
after the fact.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and I always like to give companies a shout out if they've got a good product or good service. You know, I love to give them that positive feedback.
More Naked and Afraid. We only kind of touched on that a little bit.
I really am hoping for another Naked and Afraid.
So you've done one.
I did one, and I was contacted about interest and availability for two others.
Yeah.
And, you know, Beth had just passed away, and I just really was not in a good mindset at
yeah.
all.
And I'm sorry about that. That was
ago this week.
Was it?
Yep. 2 days after Cave Capers.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's really sucks. It's been a really bad year.
When we talked, yeah, it has. I mean, it's had its ups and its downs. I mean, the Naked and Afraid saga is definitely in there, but I'm sure it's
hard
for you to...
That's a very bittersweet. I mean, she was my biggest supporter, and to not have her there at the watch party was... I had a great turnout. I really
did.
Yeah,
I know, but not the most important person.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's really hard to do without her.
Yeah.
Everything's hard to do without her.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been a year. Can't keep living in the past.
Yeah, I know,
but... I've got to start trying to get back in that headspace.
But you can also give the wound some time.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take some time.
Oh, it's going to take a lot of time. A lot of time.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
She'll always be with me. I mean, this tat,
yeah.
that's actually done with her ashes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So
we got to describe it.
So on my challenge, there was a hummingbird. After my partner had tapped out, there was this hummingbird that would hang out with me every morning. I'd walk down to the Aztec petroglyphs.
Yeah.
And just sit and reflect. You know, the Aztecs could do this. I know I can.
Why can't I?
And this hummingbird would... She'd hang out over my shoulder, and I always envision her over my left shoulder. I think that's pretty well where she hung out.
Yeah.
But she'd hang out with me every single morning, and I named her Beth, and I would have my conversation every morning with Beth.
Oh.
So.
Was any of that used in?
It wasn't.
No.
Unfortunately, wasn't there for any of that, and I was as early in the mornings. So
they should have given you a talking head to like describe that.
Because
that's like that's a heart piece, man.
Right.
Like
it
there's
really
no way
is.
That.
But I didn't ever catch it on diary cam. And if it's not on diary cam, it didn't happen.
Oh.
So I was on talking with production for quite a while and through it with editing. After Beth had passed, I wanted a still shot of that hummingbird.
Yeah.
And never could get it. Apparently, I never got it on diary cam myself. So
she was camera shy.
Fault. Right. Well, it's kind of an intimate moment. You know?
Yeah,
I'm not
exactly.
trying to talk to the camera. I'm trying to talk to the bumblebird.
All right.
Later, after the challenge, I found out that this hummingbird is the Costa hummingbird.
Yeah?
That's the species that's out there. Now, Beth's last name
was
Costa.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
So
holy crap!
I decided I'm getting a tattoo of that hummingbird, and it's the realism. It's not like a cartoon bird. This
yeah.
is actually from a photograph of that species. And around it is the quote. It's something that Beth said all the time. I'll figure it out when I get there.
Yeah.
That quote is done with Beth's ashes.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
ton. I think it turned out really, really well.
It really looks good.
So she's literally with me until I meet my end.
I'd say that's appropriate.
Over the heart.
Over the heart.
Over the lung that she had the tumors in.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was just right there where that hummingbird was hanging out all throughout the challenge.
Man. That's all we need right there.
Don't want to go out on a sad note.
But no, but we can go out on a different note. Okay, so how about this? What's coming?
What's next for you? My ultimate plan is, and this has been in the works for a few years, it was actually a part of Beth and I's plan. She was going to, once she retired, she was going to be living out her van life.
Mm-hmm.
So she's already traveling all over the place. So rather than come to Indiana to see me, she would just come to Mexico to see me.
Yeah.
So my plan is still, I intend to move to Mexico and hopefully sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I'd really like to be there in October. That's not going to happen at this point. I just don't think I can afford to make that move right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to be there by April. And we're going to start off-grid super Adobe community.
Nice.
Of survivalists out in the mountains of Aguas Caliente.
Yeah? Is this with people that you've met throughout the Naked and Afraid journey?
Yeah. The one that's actually, it's her dream, is Kelly Roski, and she's actually a Kentucky gal, but she grew up more in Hawaii and eventually back and forth Hawaii and Mexico. But she's got this dream of having this off-grid community up in high in the mountains. And I want to get something above 8,000 feet.
Oh, there you go.
If there's any kind of flooding or anything on a mass level, and this is environmentally speaking, I see it coming. The world's going to be going through some big changes here, and I believe it'll happen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And we're just on the tipping point of so many different scenarios playing out, and want to be somewhere safe.
I see.
So do this off-grid community, and no more working for the man, just going to work for myself.
Yeah.
I love that off-grid lifestyle, and Mexico is something near and dear to my heart, and I feel more at home in Mexico than anywhere on earth.
Well, that's...
been there twice now to two different areas, and I love it.
There's for caving? About,
I haven't done any caving.
No caving in Mexico yet?
Not yet, but while I'm in Nayarit, that's only roughly three hours from Oaxaca. So there's a good opportunity to get involved with like Tony and Marion.
Yeah. They already know you.
Yeah. And if I find something there in Aguas Caliente, there's nothing documented, but it's also not a friendly area. So it's possible I could find and document the first cave in the mountains there.
Yeah.
There's certainly a lot of room for it.
Right kind of rock and everything?
I believe so. Yeah. I haven't been there personally to check it out.
No.
But just from what I'm seeing on the topography and the research that I'm doing, it sounds like there's plenty of limestone.
Are you going to be back for capers and stuff like that? Or are you pretty
I'm
much
afraid
there for,
once I
to
go,
stay?
I have no plans of returning.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got to do this.
I'm just saying that I have no intentions of coming back.
Okay. All right. That's exciting, though.
I want that freedom.
Yeah. Well, how are they going to reach you for another Naked and Afraid?
I'll have email.
You'll have email. Well, all right. Yeah, we can. There's
we'll
some things there's some things we can't do without.
I'll keep my phone.
Yeah,
I'll have to figure out some sort of income.
That's exciting, though, man. What about between now and then? You wanting to get into Binkley again anytime soon?
I would love to. Right now, they're wanting to go back to the McLean section, and
that I'm takes just, some time.
It does.
That's
and
a long journey.
Something. It's been such a long time since I've done a marathon trip. I'm just not in shape.
What are you talking about? I'm looking at you. You're. What do you mean you're not in shape?
I need to work up to a trip like that.
It's all right. Cave shape is different, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
It is different.
I've still never made it back to my insertion weight. So I lost 12 pounds on my challenge, and in the past year and a half, I have put on 6 pounds.
Okay.
So I lose weight. I cannot put it back on. I'm really struggling. So
you just buy some ice cream, man.
Yeah, I've tried that.
You have?
I actually started putting on weight when I got rid of a lot of the carbs.
Get the big half gallons. Just eat the whole thing.
Oh, I was. That was literally a nighttime snack every night. Just that and sticks of butter and anything I can to put on fat. I lose about
some people,
2 pounds every
Some people
night
kill for that ability.
Right. I think my next big plans with caving is OTR. And
okay,
I'd like to say I would love to see more of an Indiana representation at OTR.
Yeah.
Please, Indiana cavers, come out to OTR.
How often have you been?
I've been one time, and it changed my life.
Yeah. Why is that? What makes it so
it's
different?
It's just such an awesome party.
Yeah.
Such an awesome party with such awesome people. And, you know, Indiana Cave Capers is awesome. It really is. This is a great event. Spelio Fest, great event. You get to hang out with a lot of cavers from your region.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really bring in a whole lot from around the country or around the globe.
Mm.
OTR brings in cavers from everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
And you can count on how many people at a typical OTR? 500-600?
Oh, no. I think we're looking more at 1,200.
1,200. Something okay,
like,
never mind.
1,700. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know.
I think 1,700 was the record.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. I want to say last year was about 1,200.
Jeez. Still in the four figures.
And
I mean,
such an awesome group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't pass up the naked hot tub. I never pass up an opportunity to get naked. 4 days of hanging out with cavers, and the whole point of OTR is to hang out with cavers above ground.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, I'm sure some people go caving, though.
That was kind of, they do, but mostly it's people will come in the week ahead of time and go caving that week, and then during OTR, you just party. Big party.
All day parties.
Yes. It's like Burning Man for cavers or Woodstock for cavers. Yeah, it's a really good time. I recommend it to anyone and everyone out there.
All right.
Now, you do have to be a member. You got to be a member of the Roberts Foundation, or you got to be a guest of somebody. And the thing I like about OTR is what makes it such a laid-back environment is if you're a member and you bring a guest,
mm-hmm.
and your guest causes any kind of trouble, they get kicked out for life. They're taking you with them.
Oh, really?
You are also kicked out for life.
Oh.
So you are very selective of the people that you bring with you to this event.
Yeah.
Everybody gets along so great, and everything's all mellow.
So that sort of thing doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't happen. Yeah. So,
but it's in there. It's a rule. It's in there just in case, just to keep, just to filter out the riffraff.
I've had some girlfriends in the past before Beth that, you know, there is no way I would take these women to OTR. I don't want to get kicked out right off the bat. So with Beth, it was a whole different story. So we tried to go the 2021,
mm-hmm.
it got canceled. Again, 2022, it got canceled.
Did it really?
That was actually a good thing, because 22 was when it got canceled. I had the SJVG at my house and took a group of the grotto up to check out some pits that are right out. Basically, they're about a half mile down the road from my house and overlooking my property.
Yeah.
One of the guys was going to propose to his now fiance. And it was going to be some big surprise. I'll take him out there to check out these pits, and then he's gonna get her to the overlook and pop the question.
Nice.
Well, at the second pit, one of the guys looks down in there, and he says, something's down there. Something's moving. And Ashley ends up looking down there, and she says, because I was like, yeah, it's just a coon or a possum or something. Ashley looks in, and she says, it's just a rock. Oh, that rock just moved.
Oh.
Come to find out, it was a dog that had been trapped in the cave for 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
It was something like 127 pounds when it went in. It was like 47 pounds when we pulled it out.
Oh, my God.
That dog would have been dead had OTR not been canceled. That dog would not have survived probably another couple days. It was bad.
Oh, my goodness.
We got it out, and within a few hours, we reunited it with, we got it to somebody who could give it the care that it needed, the diet and everything that it needed.
Reported it, and somebody picked up
on it? I reported it on Facebook, and we ended up finding the owners within 24 hours. They were reunited after like 48 or something like that because it was Labor Day weekend. So the Humane Society was closed, but they were caring for the dog.
Yeah.
It's got to go under or go through these treatments before we can even release it back to its owner.
Sure, sure.
So then Beth and I went up for the reunion with the owner.
Aww.
Yeah, his name was Hawkeye.
What? How did it end up there?
It had apparently been chasing a dog that was in heat.
Oh, okay.
And
so it was an intact male.
Yeah, he was okay. Intact, and he was on a mission.
He was on a mission.
I'm assuming he was at one point. He was only about 2 miles from home. Yeah. At one point, he probably was no longer after this other dog, but now lost and probably got sidetracked, distracted by a coon or a possum, which can easily dart down into this pit and back out again.
Yeah.
While the dog just goes right over the top of it and into the pit.
Was it injured?
It wasn't injured.
So it just couldn't get out.
It had we found a collar up at the top of the pit, and it was just about 10 feet down. And maybe 15, and that collar looked like it didn't break the snap or the clasp, but it looked like it had probably got hooked on a limestone hook or fissure.
Oh.
And that dog had to have been hanging and struggling. You could see the claw marks, and then they just drop. And it was another 15-foot drop to an open floor, a nice flat landing.
Yeah, okay.
So it was able to basically slide down the wall. There's no coming up, but he could slide down the wall to at least the last 8 feet before it was just a drop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was relatively unharmed. A few scratches, a few bruises, and that was about it.
Shit.
And incredibly emaciated.
Yeah, I guess. So,
yeah, he lost a lot of weight, but he's alive and well. happy to be home, and the Humane Society gave the guy, the owner, a... certificate for a free neutering. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So if you had done this, we wouldn't have had this
that's
problem.
That's right. He immediately, once the dog was healthy enough for the surgery, he went back and got it neutered.
Snip, snip, buddy.
Yeah.
Let's not do that again.
We posted that on the OTR site, and it really made it worthwhile for everybody.
I guess so.
You know, it's a good thing it got canceled.
And that
canceled.
Was last year?
That was 22.
22?
Or yeah. No, I'm sorry, 21.
21. There was one last year.
There was one last year.
Okay, all right. 21 was still canceled because of COVID.
I forget, this is still 23.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, they canceled it 2020 and again in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely recommend it. I was really disappointed when I get there and I find that there were some great Indiana cavers there.
Yeah.
Just so few.
Yeah.
So, right, yeah, come on out and represent some Hoosier hospitality.
Let's get some Indiana people
that's
OTR,
right.
For heaven's sake. This has been great. Do you want to say any more?
Rock on.
Yeah.
Keep caving. Keep pushing. Keep exploring.
Yeah.
By all means, keep naked.
Keep naked. All right? If you learn nothing else. Keep naked.
Let's normalize nudity.
Normalize nudity. Trey, I've been impressed by what you've done in Indiana and everything adjacent to your life and things like that. And it's really, really cool to be able to sit down with you. I mean, good luck with the mission across the border. That's very exciting.
Oh, thanks.
And I hope that you keep us posted on all that.
I sure will. I definitely will keep in touch. I mean, there's a lot of cavers that go from Indiana that go to Mexico regularly.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to get involved with that.
Yeah.
That project. And, I mean, I cave with these guys all the time.
Yeah.
When I was more actively caving. Anyway.
They'll give you a call.
I'm going to try to get involved with the Mexican caving community.
It's exciting stuff down there.
Oh, yeah. big caves to discover. And it's so much virgin cave. And so much history down there. Even if it is virgin, chances are it's not virgin.
and exciting stuff, too, you know? I mean, it's deep limestone down there, man.
Oh, yeah. It is. Very.
You could go for a while.
I'm really excited about the projects that they're working on down there. Just love to get in on it. Something I've always wanted to do.
Well, you'll be a local.
I'll be a local.
So they'll just call you.
That's right. And who knows? Maybe I'll find something there in Aguas Caliente and be able to invite people down there to explore these systems.
That'd be pretty rad. You'd get some people. You'd get some interest.
For sure. There's nothing documented there. So, you know, if I find something.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
Thank you, Trey.
Hey, anytime. Anytime. It's been great talking to you.
Been great talking to you.
That was fun.
Hey, how about all that?
So much fun. And good luck to Trey whenever that Mexico move happens. If it happens, I hope it does. And be sure to find Trey's episode of Naked and Afraid. There was a little more on the Naked and Afraid talk, but it contained some spoilers, so I just snipped it out. You got to go watch it for yourself. This has been the Caving Podcast. Support the podcast by supporting our sponsors, Sophie Reaptress. Get a cave suit from Sophie at sophiereaptress.com. Past sponsors, Swago, swagogear.com. There's a little Swago talk in this episode, wasn't there? Organic Robot Designs, Charlie Vetters, former CIG chair. His screen printing business based out of Greenfield, Indiana. You need t-shirts for a grotto fundraiser or something? Charlie's your man. And, of course, El Spelio, which is now being sold by OnRope One. And, next month. Next month, my guest is going to be Mike Manser. Mike Manser, who wrote The Cave Formation Repair Project. We talk all about this cool cave restoration that he does, where he fixes formations, and all the ways he's kind of figured this out, and his involvement with the National Park Service in restoring areas in caves, particularly in the Southwest. We had a great talk, and if you want to check out that book, you can get it at Spelio Books. Again, you're looking for the Cave Restoration Repair Project, and we'll talk all about it in November. My name's Matt Pelser. I'm from the Central Indiana Grotto, and until next time, kill nothing but time.